Paul Goody.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
What's happening?
I'm getting Jennifer some ice water.
Ice water?
Yep, that's the sound of the ice there going into the glass. Shutting it. I'm walking over to the refrigerator, pouring out the pitcher.
Boy, I tell you, it's a bright winter's day here in Seattle. It's one of those days where it's cold outside, but the sun is bright as F.
Wait, is it bright right now?
It's 4 o'clock, so the sun has gone down, but like 2 hours ago.
Here you are, Jennifer.
Between noon and two, it's basically in your face. Like I had to drive to run an errand today, and I came upon a stretch of road. And the angle of the road and the direction of the road was just perfect so that when I rounded a corner, the sun was right in my face and I couldn't see anything. I couldn't even, like, you know, flip the visor down to block it. It was just right there. It's dangerous, and I can't, like, you know, I have blue eyes, and I think that makes me more susceptible to the brightness of the sun than my brown-eyed friends.
Maybe so. I have blue eyes, so I've never really really looked into that.
No, man, it's...
I didn't, it's an accident. That could be something. You know, I remember there was an episode of Chips.
Yeah.
Where they had to reenact a traffic accident to prove that somebody wasn't actually...
drunk or something?
Like, drunk, yeah, that it was an accident.
Yeah.
I believe that what they determined was that either somebody was moving a mirror at the time, or, like, the sun was at a certain angle that it reflected off of a building, something like that. But they had to recreate the accident. And when they were recreating the accident, the conditions that caused the accident happened again.
And so, that convenient?
Yeah, it was. But luckily, they were safe. Our friends were safe.
Yeah, that happened to me too. The reflections off of these glass towers here in Seattle is just as bad as. Well, it's not just as bad, but it is pretty bad as the as the sun in your face.
So I've got two very interesting things that are going on.
I'll make the decision on whether they are very interesting or not.
Oh, no. Okay, I've got two interesting things of moderate moderate excitement.
Okay, lay it on me.
So I'm going through training at work, right?
Yeah.
You know, where you have an off-site meeting and then other things happen.
Right.
Like, oh, hey, let's look at this PowerPoint slide. Or, hey, let's do, you know, an exercise where we all... You know, I will tell you this, Ben. Theater games, right?
Yeah.
And business games sometimes share a little bit of DNA. Theater games are a little bit more goofy, usually, and are a little bit more fun, perhaps. But in general, the games are often very similar.
Yeah, in fact, it's not uncommon for improv troupes to lead business seminars and teach people how to work together.
I was thinking about that. Have you ever done anything like that?
I have not been an improv instructor leading a business meeting, but I have been part of a company on a retreat that was led by a business consultant, not necessarily an improv troupe. Like, there's a local improv company that's part of their income is they go around and they do these seminars, but I've not witnessed their specific brand of teaching, but I have been led through theater type games while on a company retreat.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
We do not have whatever you call it. We do not have oh gosh, I just blanked. Improv troupe, they led meetings and they had money. They get money that way. We didn't have that sort of thing at Annex. There was no real outside...
No, Annex does not have an educational arm.
So my question is this. Do you know the people that are doing these things?
Yeah, I do.
I want to ask, does it make it easier for them to fund the other art that they do that way?
Oh, I see. I don't know if the money that they receive from these corporate gigs funds the other theater, but I do know that certain grants that these nonprofits apply for are only given out if there's an educational component to your nonprofit. And so going into schools, going into businesses is considered an educational arm of your nonprofit. So a couple of theater companies do have this in their business plan. Annex does not, but some itinerant companies do, where they not just go into businesses, but they go into schools and they lead theater games. And because they do that, they claim they have an education arm. And it's not like they're falsely claiming it, but they say they have an educational arm and they can apply for more grants from the city, from the county, from the state.
Because I almost think that I'm guessing here, I don't know these people, but that they probably also have day jobs.
The specific
maybe.
People who led your training?
No. The people who led our training, right?
Yeah.
They do have day jobs because they referred to them. Like, you know, they have other stuff that they do besides
right.
this. What about our theater friends who are doing their own?
The only people that I know who do this,
yes,
their day jobs are in education and theater, right?
Oh,
so
okay.
So it's a nice like combination of their skill set.
But is this? They don't make money off of this. Their theater makes money.
They are not correct. These people leading these theater games for these nonprofits are not making money. They're volunteering their time, making money for the theater. Now, let's say theater company A goes to a school. Okay, I'm just assuming all this. I don't know because your taxes get really complicated.
Can I ask you a question? I don't mean to pry.
Pay an employee what?
Are we talking about Jet City Improv?
That's one of the theater companies, but the other specific one I was talking to is not Jet City.
Oh, okay.
It's another theater company who does mainly theater, but they do have an educational arm. And the people who go into the schools and lead workshops and all that are not employees of that theater company. Now the theater company may be making money from that, and they can, but the person cannot be paid a salary for doing that because then the nonprofit's taxes get really borked.
Right. Oh, hey, have we talked about this on the podcast before? Oh, and I'll get back to my original thing eventually. Did we talk about the time when nobody got stipends for a couple of months?
We haven't talked about it, no.
Okay. I find this interesting, so I wanted to talk to you about it. Have you ever taken unemployment insurance?
I have.
Or used your unemployment insurance?
I have.
So you know what you normally have to do. You have to go out for jobs. You have to write down in a little book how many jobs you have, or on a website probably nowadays. How many jobs you got or how many jobs you look for. And you have to write down what income you made. If you worked like part-time.
Yeah.
You have to write that you worked part-time. This is how much you made. So on and so forth.
Yeah.
Now. You already know this. But for the people who don't. What happened was. Somebody volunteered at a theater. But one of the things that the theaters like doing is giving money to their volunteers as a thank you.
In the form
called a stipend.
Exactly.
And the big thing is that you don't say, hey, come work for us. You say, hey, you did us a solid. We could never repay you for the blood, sweat, and tears you put into this, but please take this small amount.
Here's a small amount of money that might cover the parking tickets that you acquired while you were working for us.
And so this person, being an honest person, in the same way that I am, they did a thing. This is a move that I may have made in a similar situation.
Right.
And
to be clear, this wasn't you. You are specifically talking about.
To quote Shaggy, it wasn't me. Somebody else. Somebody else who wasn't me wrote down that they got this amount of money.
Yeah.
Which started a whole thing.
Yeah.
Where theater companies were all of a sudden being considered employers.
Right.
And so, you know, in true we don't make any money, what are you doing to us fashion, instead of all of a sudden giving everyone health insurance, the companies just started telling their volunteers, hey, sorry, we can't give you any money as a stipend. We will give you drink tickets or whatever. I think that's, you know, part of the thing anyway, though, is you get a stipend and also perhaps drink tickets or whatever.
It all, yeah, but it's all company dependent.
It's gotten better, I think, like that they stopped worrying about it or they stopped looking into it. But still, for a while, everyone was like, grr, that guy.
Yeah.
Why did he...
I don't know specifically, like, A of all, I don't know who that was. And B of all, I don't think he was
someone known to us.
No.
I think that it was a different theater company and a different person.
And this specific theater company that kind of started this whole thing is like a mid-sized theater, which I think they probably do pay their actors more than just, say, a $50 stipend for their shows.
Yeah.
I don't know this,
really?
I'm just assuming that they do, because they are considered one of the more mid-range theaters in town.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well.
Annex managing director Stephen McCandless has actually figured out a very clever way to get around that, which I will let him explain if he ever wants to come back on the show.
Oh, nice.
I am not going to put words in his mouth, nor do I know what I'm allowed to say.
Right.
I just know
that
Steven's a very intelligent man and has figured a way around it.
Might be a little bit out of the ordinary. Please. Yeah, I was about to say some other stuff, but I don't know what words are being searched for right now. Yeah, I mean, because Ben, you'll agree with me. It's 2017. You can search podcasts for audio phrases now, and you'll have a flag that shows up.
Yeah, I personally don't know how to do that. I would love to know how to do that, and there is probably software out there that I can buy that scans waveforms and looks for specific words.
I think it would be very, very cool.
I think we're a long ways away from every single podcast on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, being scanned, because the content out there is just so much. There's just so much.
Well, I mean, here's a question for you. What day is it today?
Today is December
the 7th.
7th.
1 week before this whole net neutrality thing happens. Or anti-net neutrality or whatever. At least as far as I know.
Oh, right, when the FCC is going to vote on repealing net neutrality.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to vote on it? That's all it is?
Well, see, here's the thing. There's like five voting members of the FCC. AgitPi is one of them. And I think two are planning on voting no, and three are planning on voting yes, repeal net neutrality.
Oh, no!
And so there was a big push to get a third one who might have been on the fence to vote no. I might be completely wrong. I haven't really been reading a lot into this. I know it's a very important issue, and when net neutrality goes away, things are just going to go downhill fast. There's a lot of other news that's been happening. In fact, recently today, I don't know if you heard this, Minnesota Senator Al Franken was pressured into resigning by his own party.
Actually, I did hear about
that. Yeah, so today at was like 11:45 Eastern, he announced on the Senate floor that he was leaving his post.
Well, you know, I have to say that I have stated on this podcast that I still feel the same way, that I really enjoyed him giving people the what for.
Yeah.
About stuff. However, I also care about other people, and I don't play, you know, favorites or whatever. It's good, I suppose, that he's resigning if it's, you know, for the right reasons.
Well, it's basically so the Democrats can claim the moral high ground in their push to try to convince Donald Trump to resign and to try to convince either Roy Moore to step aside or for Alabama voters to not vote him in.
Yeah. But Alabama voters not to vote who in?
Roy Moore. You know Roy Moore. You know of Roy Moore.
Oh, no, I don't know who that is. Wait, hold on. Let me use context of everything else. He's some guy that Trump likes, who also had some sort of inappropriate thing happen.
Oh, man. If you don't know who Roy Moore is, we got a lot of catching up to do. So,
okay.
Interestingly enough, during the Senate primary, Trump backed Roy Moore's opponent. I think his name is Luther Strange. And so when the Trump-backed guy lost, everybody was like, "Yay! The Trump backlash is starting, and it's starting in Alabama." But the Republican Senate candidate turns out to be this guy named he's a judge. He's a Judge Roy Moore. He used to be the district attorney, and it has come out that on a number of occasions, when he was in his early to mid 30s. He dated teenagers. And there's one credible allegation that he tried to date a 14-year-old girl. And on one occasion, this wasn't the 14-year-old, on one occasion, he even wrote inside a girl's high school yearbook. And so,
you know, can I just say for the record?
Cries of pedophilia have been thrown around.
Because of the way things have been going lately, just in the world, I was relieved when you said high school yearbook. Because at first, I had no idea what he was writing and where exactly he was writing it. So, this is good news, but it's also bad news.
So, Senate Republicans have called for Roy Moore to step aside. Roy Moore won't. Donald Trump has actually put his full endorsement machine to on Roy Moore's side because we can't have another liberal Democrat in the Senate because he has
so
to
he was,
pass the tax
he was
bill.
Against this guy, but now he's for the guy.
Well, he's for whoever the Republican is, even if this Republican is a known pedophile. This guy, Judge Moore, was even banned from a mall in Alabama when he was in his 30s because he was a known predator of teenage girls.
Okay, well, that's something.
Yeah.
Maybe one would want to...
And yet, his opponent is only 1 point ahead of him in the polls. And they're saying
who's
that
his opponent?
His opponent's a man named Doug Jones. Not that Doug Jones. Because Doug Jones is the name of the actor who plays a lot of voiceless, tall, skinny characters in the movies.
Well,
like Abe Sapien. He played Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies.
Oh, yeah. I know this guy.
Yeah.
There's also Dougie Jones from Twin Peaks.
I obviously do not know who that is.
You may have heard this. Oh, it's an alter ego for Agent Dale Cooper. It was his doppelganger. No, not his doppelganger. I'm sorry. It was a tupla made from him. And it, well, it's a long story. Twin Peaks spoilers.
We don't need to go back into it.
Anyhow, the big thing is this, though. I pre-ordered season 3 or Twin Peaks: The Return from Amazon on October 27th. And I was supposed to get it in December, and on the day it was supposed to be released, I was supposed to get it at 8 o'clock, and it didn't ship. I believe it was on the 5th that it was supposed to ship. It didn't ship. And then it got delayed until the 21st. And I was very sad that all this happened. But then I realized I could just get presents for my family instead of a gift for me. And so I canceled the order.
Well, there you go.
And I'll get it again some other time.
Before we move on, I have a little bit of business. If anybody pays attention to the release schedule of our little podcast, you might have seen that episode 92 was nowhere to be found.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. When I went to go schedule episode 94, which was last week's episode, mm-hmm. I noticed that on our website it went episode 90, 91, 93. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, because I remember doing it. And but for some reason, I'm wondering if I if
did you? Is it a numbering problem?
No,
or
it was. It was probably user error. I'm sure that I for whatever reason didn't save the blog post that schedules all these things before I left the page. Because it was on the MP3 was still on our hosting site, so all I had to do was just relink it. But yeah. So
there's nothing I need to do.
No.
Is what you're saying.
No, it's nothing you need to do.
Okay, good.
So yeah, so episode 92 and 94 posted about the same time, even though they are 2 weeks apart. So yeah, but it's all there now. Go to goodylearns.com, click on the podcast button. And listen to us babble on about pedophile Senate candidates.
Wait, that we did that earlier also, or you're just
no that well that's what we were talking about today. So
well, gosh,
on that episode we talked about the weather, spelling class, sports, and schoolyard bullies. The schoolyard bullies, the band, Time Code, the movie, Michel Gondry. Black and white film versus video, Corrections, Taboo, starring Tom Hardy, The East India Company, New Film Ideas, The Golden Globes, thinks Get Out as a comedy, and that's all that is in the little blurb.
By the way, Netflix, Dark. Have you seen it? The TV show Dark, or heard anything about it?
No, I thought you were saying that Netflix shut off.
No. Netflix, Dark. It's the name of a show.
I have not seen it, no. I do know that Netflix is raising its price again on me.
Oh, what? Really?
Yeah.
Dang it. The Good Place, which is a show on NBC. I just recently watched it on Netflix. And it's a good show. It's actually really, really funny. It doesn't seem like a show that I would expect to be on network TV. It's not necessarily dirty or anything. It's just that it's good.
Yeah.
And the thing that I suggested to Jennifer was that it's possible that this show, the reason that I like it is because me, Jennifer, and all that, we're now kind of the age range for the people that are writing these shows now.
Yeah.
In fact, we may be a little bit older than some of these folks now.
Honestly, we're probably about 15 to 18 years older than these people. I'm sure a lot of the TV writers today are in their early to mid-20s.
TV writers today, get out of my lawn. Wait, get out of my lawn?
Tremors. Get into my car.
Get out. Hey, wait a second, Senator. You can't be at this mall anymore. No, I'm sorry. Hey, look, all that I'm saying is there's no hierarchy of badness, I was about to say, and then I was like, well, maybe there is. Predatory behavior, and I'm, you know,
There's a hierarchy of badness when you're talking about two very specific things that is occupying the news cycle right now. There's Al Franken, who has been accused of groping women.
Now, can I ask you a question? The people who are accusing him of groping them, right?
Yeah.
I hate to do this, but I choose sides or whatever. They're liberal folks, right? I mean, this is not a...
Well, a lot of people are claiming this is a partisan attack, because the very first woman who came out to say this is a frequent guest on Sean Hannity's radio show.
I'm not trying to make like this into a backhanded compliment or and that's not the right term anyway. But the big thing is people in general sometimes say that, oh, people on the left are too sensitive. You know, back in my day, a guy could, you know, do X, Y, or Z and it was fine. I don't get where all this stuff is coming from.
Right.
But and what I'm saying is, and that's why my original thought, and I'm not trying to like prove anything or cause anything, but my original thought was, aha, you know, women are coming forward. You know, I would assume that because Al Franken is a liberal guy, you know, that the people coming forward were people in his employ or people that, you know, that were in his circle, I guess.
Yeah.
But from what you're saying, they're people who met him.
Yeah. I mean, the accounts that I've heard have not been have just been for people who have met him or who have had to work with him in the comedy sphere. Now, his staffers did come out when all these allegations against former Senator Franken started coming out. His female staffers wrote a letter in support of Al Franken, saying he's very respectful and he champions women and so on and so forth. But
yeah, well,
but again,
I mean,
this
that's
is
something, right?
It's this like the Democratic leadership pressured Al Franken to resign. I want to say part of it has to do with, he acted poorly in the past. This was before he was a senator, but he acted poorly in the past and should not be in public service. But I think that a majority of this is so that the Democrats can say, look, we kicked out our bad people. It's time for the Republicans to do the same.
Yeah, that does make sense. And you know, one of the things I would say is that it does once the idea has been floated or once the concept has been floated, whatever.
Yeah. It does
of someone who's been accused of something, how you react based on that, you're going to be judged, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of are you applying everything equally?
It does feel like a coordinated hit. He was like the biggest critic of the telecommunication industry in Congress.
Well, that's something.
And as we've mentioned, the FCC is considering repealing net neutrality rules.
There was something that I had heard recently that I thought I remember what it was. I forgot about that. So this is I want to let you know, right? This is very uncharacteristic of me. And by uncharacteristic of me, I mean I do this kind of thing all the time.
Okay.
And I'm sorry for what I'm about to do. I am going to go a little bit crazy for just a second. And that's that. So there was a movie. Okay, because here's what happened. I think I might have mentioned this too. When Harvey Weinstein got in trouble.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, same rules as Woody Allen. I got to go and see what movies I don't want to support.
Right.
And there were a lot of like Quentin Tarantino films and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But one of the other films that was out was like an update to Fahrenheit 9/11.
Wait,
which
what?
Was sort of an update to Fahrenheit 9/11.
Fahrenheit 451?
No, Fahrenheit 9/11, the Michael Moore film.
Oh, okay.
And it was reversed. It was Fahrenheit 11/9. It's in like 2018, I guess. I want to say, like, it hasn't come out yet.
Right.
It was going to come out.
Yeah.
And it was about the Trump election. And Harvey Weinstein was one of the executive producers of this thing.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I wasn't going to go and see it anyway. But it's funny that you said this feels like a coordinated hit because this guy is a, you know, Al Franken is one of the FCC.
Yeah. He's a big
critics.
Proponent of net neutrality.
Yeah. It's just, you know, this Weinstein thing. We're like, oh, you know, how this is amazing that they finally got him. How is it possible? And I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying it's a thing that we are going to see, I believe, a fracturing of the old lines of what's, you know, like our team, their team, whatever. It's already happening. The kids, Ben, I've mentioned this before. The kids, the cool kids, the politically active kids and all that, a lot of them could care less about liberals in general. I'm putting that in quotes. Because they use that as a slur also.
Yeah.
But it means someone who isn't left enough.
Yeah. It's also, I don't think it's just, I want to say that a lot of the derision is also focused not just towards liberals, but Democrats, because Democrats, to them, Democrats and Republicans are the same.
Right.
They're people.
So what I'm saying is like,
pro-business.
Yeah, and I
the pro-business party of America.
I think you and I are in agreement in this idea that that if somebody comes up to a kid and says, "Haha, how do you like this? Your idol Michael Moore is not going to get his movie, you know, made or whatever," they'd be like, "So what?
Yeah.
I don't care about him." You remember Velvet Rut? The Velvet Rut.
Yeah, it was a play that Annex produced back in 2000 or 99.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about that play.
2001.
There's a gang, like sort of an anarchist gang of, you know, kids, sort of.
Yeah.
Younger folks. And this police officer, I believe played by Christopher Dietz, I want to say, comes
Probably.
In.
He was in the show.
And he's like, "Who's in charge here?" And the whole play, right, has led up to this thing where no one is in charge.
Yeah.
And the fact that no one is in charge makes it impossible for him to really continue with what he's trying to do. Because there's no one ringleader to get.
That's why I never elect to be the person in charge.
And it really, when I saw that, it really impacted me. I was like, "Whoa, that's a good piece of theater right there." Because I you know, I could think about it logically afterwards. Like, well, you just bring more trucks and get everybody or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was like, yeah, man, if nobody's in charge, no one can get in trouble. Which, it's not exactly
not
what
really.
They're saying, but it is sort of.
Not really a philosophy that one can live by.
Or is it?
Is,
I think it can be.
If it to reverse a phrase, if no one's in charge, then everyone is in charge.
Yeah. What I will say is this. It's not a philosophy I could live by, probably. But I could see the kids, the American kids, getting down with... Oh, my God.
What?
That's not what I meant. I could see the American kids getting down with this idea. My God. Betty, I have mentioned this to you before. I have reached old person stage. I'm almost 45. And Betty has stated that I cannot use slang terms anymore.
Oh,
I've just reached that point.
Really?
She's like no, Dad.
What
you
kind
can't
of,
say that.
What, like, what slang terms are verboten in your household these days?
Well.
Faux shizzle?
Hey, Betty.
On the regular?
It's not yelling for Betty time, but I have a question for you. Can you name a couple of things that I'm not allowed to say because it's too much like I'm trying to be hip with the kids?
Get dunked on and...
Oh, I can't say get dunked on.
Get dunked on?
Yeah, it's when somebody messes up and somebody else like calls them on it. Like,
I mean, it was actually get wrecked, but because of video games, yeah.
So it's get wrecked or get dunked on. It's like, oh, dude, get dunked on is like aw snap, kind of.
Okay, it's the kids' version of aw snap.
Yeah.
Just don't dab at all.
Oh yeah, I'm not supposed to dab.
Well, that's no, you shouldn't do that anyway. Nobody should do that.
I did it once, and it was because...
And also, you're not allowed to say boy!
Oh, and I can't say boy.
What?
Well, you can say boy, but not like...
I can't say boy, which is... And I know my inflection is probably wrong also.
Are you
it's
not,
just a way...
Are you not supposed to say boy?
No, boy. Like...
Like, oh boy?
Like, boy, when you use it in the right way... It's sort of like saying,
"Boy, Todd,
hey, man,
yeah. Oh,
what did you just do?
Oh,
you
I
went
see.
Too far now." That's kind of what it means. But it's in one word. Boy.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, no. I will always be allowed to say, "Boy," because the guy who came up with that is older than I am. And I think that's the rule. You can use the slang of the people who are older than you or your contemporaries.
Now, is that Flava Flav?
That is Flavor Flav.
All right.
In fact, let's see. Bass, hello, Bring the Noise. I believe Bring the Noise starts with Flavor Flav saying, yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy. I don't know if it starts with that, but I know that is in the song.
I mean, it really strikes me how influential Flavor Flav was. And I'm being serious. I'm not being, you know.
He did a lot for hype men.
Yes, he was.
He paved the way. He paved the golden way.
To the point where if you're going to talk about hype men, and you're going to say the phrase hype man, and somebody goes, what are you talking about? You just go Flavor Flav. And they're like, oh, right.
I did hear that he's broke and he's suing Chuck D for Public Enemy royalties that he believes he's due.
I would suggest that maybe that makes sense.
Yeah.
It also explains why he is not in Prophets of Rage, because he's not.
Is that the latest Public Enemy track?
Okay. So Prophets of Rage is Chuck D, the guy from Cypress Hill, whose name I can't remember, and Rage Against the Machine, and maybe some other people. It's a super group,
Okay. Basically.
And they do Rage Against the Machine songs, and they do Public Enemy songs, and they do Cypress Hill songs, I believe.
Really? So they just
yeah.
read... cover all of their old stuff with the new band?
Yep.
Wow.
Different. Well, and no, they have their own. They have new songs also. They actually.
Does it work, or does it sound like Mike Doty trying to cover old Soul Coughing songs?
Oh boy, Ben, shots fired. Get dunked on, Mike Doty.
I'm only saying that because I know Jennifer hates that album.
Okay.
There's some songs on there that I think are okay, but again, they will never live up to the originals.
Well, Jennifer made a good point in that many times it sounds like he's making fun of Soul Coughing in some ways. Like, some of his instrumentation does seem a little mean-spirited. The barking dogs, for example.
He's like any artist, he goes through his phases, right? And he just he made that album when he was in his like synth drum phase.
Yeah, true. So
like, I saw him come through town earlier this year, I think. I can't remember exactly when it was, but he played the Crocodile, and he had, and I may have talked about this, he had a full band with him, and the opening band, Wheatus, also played with him, and he was leading the band like one conducts an orchestra, and they just covered old Soul Coughing and some classic solo Mike Doty stuff, and it actually worked. It sounded really good. I mean, if he sold a recording of his live show, I would buy it. You know, it was actually quite catchy.
Well, that's something he should do.
So,
Mike Doty, if you're listening, and I know you are.
Yeah, sorry that I dunked on you earlier, Paul.
If you're listening, I'm sorry that I jumped on stage. I thought it was a good idea at the time. I know it's not now.
I was just thinking about that the other day, about when we went to the Triple Door to see the Question Jar show with Mike Doty and Andrew Scrap Livingston, his bassist. And between songs, they would read questions from a jar that were put in by the audience before the show. And your question, what was your question, Paul?
Okay, see, so this is, I need to, I did a calculated thing and it worked perfectly, except for the fact that it kind of freaked him out. I wrote, my question was, will you write a song or maybe or do a concept album, one of the two, based on my book? And he read it, and then he said, sure, but I don't know what your book is. And then I ran on stage and handed him a copy of my book.
Yeah.
And everybody clapped and laughed. At least that's my recollection of it.
Well, here's what happened from my point of view. You were ready to run to the stage every time he pulled a question out. And when you knew that he was reading your question, you ran to the side of the stage. You didn't like immediately just jump on stage. You ran to the side entrance of the stage. And then when Mike Doty said, yeah, man, then you just walked on from the side of the stage. And so you just appeared there. So you didn't charge the stage from the audience's point of view. You just you just appeared there from behind the wings. But the problem was you were behind him. He wasn't facing you at the time. The audience saw you pop on and went crazy, and then I think, you know, that's when he turned around and saw this strange dude just standing right there. And then we went to go speak with him to get CD signed after the show, and that's when he mentioned that you freaked him out.
But he was surprisingly cool about it.
Yeah, no, he was super cool about it. And he's actually one of those kinds of artists who will tell the house staff to kick someone out.
Yeah, and it didn't happen, which is good. Yeah. I'm eating a cookie, Ben, and I apologize.
It's not me you have to apologize to.
Sorry, Jennifer. I'm eating a cookie. I've been eating kind of throughout this. I didn't get a chance to eat while I was in my training, so I've been kind of hungry.
Yeah.
I was going to wait until after the podcast, but I just couldn't.
After
that's fate and Ben.
When we're done recording here, I'm gonna hop in my car and run over to West of Lennon because we are teching Chapter 5 of the Panel Jumper live tonight. which is
hey, all right.
The show is tomorrow, 8 p.m. West. Well, by the time this drops, the show will already have happened. So why didn't you show up?
Yeah, come on, you guys. Who's on the bill for tonight?
On the bill tonight, we have a new play. Well, not a new play, but we have a play by Brett Fetzer and Julia Waller-Prusan called Stop Thief. I believe it was originally written for a 1448. We have musician and composer Aaron J. Shea and his foot-stomping banjo stylings. We have a brand new episode of The Panel Jumper.
Issue number 6,
EC Come, EC Go, about EC Comics, which we've discussed here.
Yes, we have.
We have a performance art duo, Rocketman and Beano.
And wait, what?
Don't get confused. It has nothing to do with the Rocketman. This is just two people. They call themselves Rocketman and Beano.
Performance art duo. Is that allowed, Ben? Can
I know, right?
Can they?
Did we not trademark that when we had the chance? Damn it!
Like when you read it, I was like, wait a second. I didn't know that I was doing. Oh wait, who are they? Yeah.
Our industry guest is YA Comics author Kazu Kibuishi.
Wow.
We're gonna have a
I don't know who that is.
A live recording of the Perfect Bound podcast. And
nice.
To end the evening, we have Burlesque by Sally Savant.
Sally Savant. Can I tell you?
We always end the show with a little bit of Burlesque.
The same thing that I always have said, the best Burlesque I ever saw was when we were doing, I think it was Nana's Muff. We sang it at a Burlesque show.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah,
we did that. And somebody did a Burlesque act to Douglas Adams, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, or or just Douglas, or the concept of Douglas Adams, one of the two. It was pretty awesome.
I don't remember that, but there was we were part of a Burlesque show at Open Circle Theater back when they were in Belltown. And yeah,
that is the one, I believe.
Yeah, and
where that happened.
Yeah, we just
she didn't explain it to anyone, right?
Yeah.
And when I figured out what was happening, it was the greatest thing ever. Basically.
I'm not too versed in Douglas Adams, and so I don't remember being able to watch any of the performances because we just spent the entire show backstage in the dressing
there
room.
There was also Cocktails at the Center of the Earth was my most uncomfortable Burlesque thing. I think it was Cocktails at the Center of the Earth.
That was a play.
I want to say.
That was at Annex.
Yeah. There was a, because Jennifer was in it, and there was a Burlesque part to it, and I happened to be sitting in the right place for the person to mess with me a little bit.
Never sit in the front row.
And she was like, there's something wrong. I think she said to Jennifer, there's something wrong with that guy or whatever. And then Jennifer was like, oh, that's my husband. I want to say, she will most likely correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, that was something that that happened that was Burlesque related.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what I teased earlier that I was going to go into what else has been going on. So I do this training thing at work. But at the same time, there's like a big thing that's happening at work.
A big thing? Like a Christmas party?
No. Like a work thing. Like
a rollout.
Like if I were an architect, this would be, oh, we have the presentation is on Thursday and I have to do my architecture presentation.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's happening at the same time. I'm not there, and I can't use my equipment to talk to people. So when I get off of work, quote unquote, which is this training, then I have to go back to work, which is, you know, checking my email and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
So this has been a small island in a sea of frustration today.
Well,
it was pretty good. I like the people I work with.
Well, that's good.
It's a nice place to work.
I left a job once because they hired someone I didn't like. I'm like, you know, the only reason I work here is because I like hanging out with everybody, but now I'm moving on.
There are a couple times where I've noted to the people I work with, I can work with this person, but if this person is ever put in charge of me, I cannot do it. That's where I get to, because, you know, I'm pretty easygoing.
Yeah.
I've stated this too, or if I get put in charge of them, that's the other thing. Like, it makes it a little nerve-wracking.
More so if they're put in charge of. I understand the impulse to be able to work with someone, but not be able to work for them.
Yeah. There's that, right? Them having power over you. But then there's also, like I said, the thing of being responsible for the output of someone who I just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't really want to. I'm not a sadist. You know, I don't like the idea of, haha, now I'm in charge. No, I just, you know, you do your thing over there. I'll be here. I'll say hi to you. You know, I may even ask you how your weekend was, but I don't want to spend a lot of time going over stuff with you.
Yeah.
I will say this also. Today was the first time in a long time where I kind of lost my temper, where I just need everyone. I have 10 minutes to get this done. I need everyone to leave me alone right now.
Did you throw the gauntlet down? Were you like, just get out, leave me alone?
Well, I couldn't, because I was in a large room filled with people. I couldn't just say get out. But I did say, I need everyone to leave I got 10 minutes to do this. I need everyone to leave for right now.
Yeah.
Because I was doing stuff during breaks. And it worked out. But, you know, it's one of those things where you say, hey, I'm not going to be around. Here's what you need to do, this, this, and this. And then something happens that you hadn't anticipated.
Yeah.
Nobody else knows about. And you're like, okay, great. Well, I'll just, yeah. Let's make up something. That's a big thing. I figured out, once you reach a certain level of professional advancement, like, you're kind of in uncharted territory. There isn't a lot. There are guidelines, but there's not a lot of structure there. There's not a lot of meat. You have to kind of set boundaries and say, we are doing this, we're not doing this, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, one can say that that's the difference between management and employees. The managers just know how to bullshit better.
Yeah, I would say, and it's not even, this is the thing that I learned. I don't manage employees per se, but I am kind of part of management now. Is that the real thing where you actually become management is when you realize it's not real, but it's also not bullshit.
Yeah.
Like the stuff that you make up, like, here's a great example. There's a room, there's a table and a chair and a TV and a lamp, right? And if you're non-management, you're like, oh, I wonder if I can move this lamp. Does this lamp go here? Does this table go here? You know, I don't know where this stuff is supposed to go. I'll ask the manager, right? Now, the manager has the same, like, I don't know where this stuff should go impulse. The difference is that once the manager decides where it goes, that's where it goes.
Right.
And once you realize that, then it makes sense. So, for instance, we don't have a way to sign off on this. So I type a thing out saying, I hereby say that I have signed off on this, and put a little blank for you to sign and a little thing for the date. And there you go. I've just created the sign off sheet.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's really mostly where it is. And the thing is that once you realize that, it's good. But once you realize that if you don't pay attention to it, you can create something that will have a life of its own and be stupid forever. That's another issue.
Welcome to the world of business, Paul.
Exactly. Stupid Forever, The Business Story by Paul Goody and Ben Lahr.
Systems that were put in place because somebody panicked, and now it's how we do things.
Exactly. I always tell this story at work, and it's It's got a couple of different formats of it, depending on what culture you live in and all that. But it's the minister's cat. Have I told it to you before?
No. What's the minister's cat?
All right. So there's this church, and the old minister walks up to the pulpit. He's standing behind the pulpit, and he starts giving a sermon, and this cat starts meowing really loud. And it's at the window, right, meowing while he's doing his speech. And finally, he's like, could somebody take that cat and throw it in the shed, please? And so the next time he gives his thing, the cat crawls up again, starts meowing. He's like, somebody take that cat and put it in the shed, please. So they put the cat in the shed. And afterwards, he says, okay, look, every Sunday, before I give my sermon, somebody put the cat in the shed. And so they start doing that. And then the priest dies, or the pastor dies. And a new pastor comes in. And the guy who puts the cat in the shed tells the pastor, hey, just so you know, we have this rule around here. Before you give your sermon, we put the cat in the shed. So, you know, we're just going to keep doing that. Yeah. The guy goes, yeah, that sounds good. Keep doing that. So then the cat dies. And the new minister says, okay, go out and get a new cat.
Yeah.
So that we can keep putting it in the shed. He doesn't know why it happened. He just knows that we're supposed to do it. And so he does. And those kind of rules are all over the place.
Yeah.
But and then there's the opposite thing where it's like, oh, okay, we keep on having to, Lost, the TV show Lost, keep on having to enter these numbers in. Why? I don't know. Well, okay, let's not do it this time. And then everything blows up or whatever. Hey, Lost spoilers. Okay.
Boy, they sure know how to write that show, didn't they?
I liked Lost. Other people don't like it.
I never saw it. I'm just making fun of it because everybody makes fun of it.
I really think that if you watch the show Lost and you binge it, it's not as bad as if you're waiting every week and you're like, what? What is happening now? What, this? And if you don't expect the ending to be weird, which I did.
So so the ending is it logical at least? Does it make sense, or is it just like they had a contest to see who could write the weirdest ending, and that's what they went with?
No, see, that's what I wanted, but it didn't. It made more sense. Betty, I need you to get ready because we're gonna go to the store. Do you know why?
What?
It's the end of the podcast. Hey, Betty.
What?
So Christmas is coming.
The goose is getting fat.
What are you looking for Christmas this year?
I am mostly looking forward to the stuff I get, and I'm totally not looking forward to all the time that on Christmas Eve, Grandma and Grandpa are going to take talking about Jesus.
Oh, okay, that wasn't what I meant, but we can take that, I suppose.
They're going to be like, okay, so we have all these wonderful gifts right here, but the best gift of all is Jesus.
Well, Betty, some people would say that the best gift of all is Jesus, and we'll leave it at that. I meant really what specific presents you might want, but...
Too late now.
Talking badly about religion is also an option. And with that, Ben, I ask you to keep it wrong.
And I wish you would do the same, Paul. Keep it wrong.
Oh, man, you should totally see the grin on her face. She knows exactly what happened.
All right, man, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Ben. All right. I'll see you later. Yep. Bye.
Bye.